Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Laura Stanley, host of Inside School Food. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Greetings and welcome to Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher, also known as the Food Healer, and I'm excited about today's show because we're talking about something called fledglings, which I don't think everyone knows what they are. So I will be speaking with Dave Magpyong of the Fledgling Birder Institute, all about what fledglings are and what he does and all that good stuff. So let's get started. Dave, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Celia. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to talk to me. I really appreciate it.
Not a problem. I love talking about birds and sharing birds. It's fun stuff.
Awesome. So let's just take it from the top and get started.
Okay.
So how did you get into birding?
Oh, well, how did I get into birding? I've always liked nature as a kid, but growing up in the suburbs of South Jersey, I didn't go out and see a lot of. I played baseball. I ran around the streets with the kids, had fun. I thought if you were going to be a naturalist or a biologist, you had to go to rainforest or to Africa and see those big, giant animals and those amazing habitats.
Mm.
So I, you know, missed out on a bunch of stuff. And, you know, I still like to see bugs and, you know, squirrels bouncing around and, you know, those big black hawks flying overhead. I always love to see them.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I was about 28 years old, and I was at that point married, and my wife spent a lot of time in Cape May, you know, growing up.
Yeah.
So we would go down every weekend, and we were down one fall. We were staying at a friend's house on the shore. I woke up real early for the sunrise, and I went outside, and on the deck, I'm looking at the sunrise. Oh, it's a beautiful morning. And then I noticed there was some freak a block away with, like, three cameras set up.
Hmm.
So, being the curious guy I am, I went down. I said, "Hey, got enough cameras to take pictures of the sun?" And he goes, "Oh, I'm actually counting birds."
Huh.
And he was doing the Avalon Sea Watch for New Jersey Audubon.
Huh.
So we're sitting there, and he starts pointing out things. I said, "Oh, there's a seagull." And he goes, "Actually, that's a herring gull." And he corrected me on seagulls and gave me a little tutorial on different types of gulls.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sitting there, and on the jetty, on 7th Street Jetty in Avalon, and there was a beautiful little calico cat-looking bird on the jetty.
Huh.
I'm like, "Oh, my gosh, what is that?" He goes, "That's called a ruddy turnstone." And he let me look in what I thought was a camera, but it was a spotting scope. And this bird was just beautiful.
Mm.
And I was like, "Oh, my gosh, we have something like that around here?" And we talked a little bit, and I told him we were going down to Cape May, you know, about 15 miles south for the afternoon. He goes, "If you go up on the hawk watch, tell them I said hi."
Oh, no. Cool.
And I'm sitting here thinking, this guy is out of his mind. So we go down to the Hawk Watch, and we're at Cape May Point State Park. Beautiful place. If you've never been there, you got to get there.
Mm.
And, you know, I have these great big binoculars. My wife got me because I was starting to get into birds. You know, I wanted to see those big black hawks.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm up there, and a bird flies right past me. And I said, "Wow, that was cool. It was so awesome." And the guy stands next to me and says, "Wow, what'd you see?" I was like, "What was that beautiful orange bird?" He says, "Let me see your binoculars." And he grabs these big, giant 16-power binoculars,
mm-hmm,
and looks at me. And in his nicest tone says, "These suck. Try these." And he hands me a pair of glass that was much smaller, more compact.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't even feel like manly in my hand because it was so much smaller than,
yeah,
what I had. But magically, these birds looked totally different. And he started pointing out. And that day alone, I saw 7 or 8 species of hawk that I never knew existed.
Oh, wow.
And my eyes were opened. And at that point, I was like, "Oh, crap, I've been missing all this stuff for 28 years.
How funny.
And I started getting a little impassioned or obsessed, whichever you want to call it. So that's what got me started.
And so what are your favorite things about it?
About birding?
Yeah.
Time outside is one thing. You know, just being out there. But I think the reasons I like to enjoy birds are same reasons that so many other people enjoy watching birds. First of all, they're beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at a bird, just feathers alone or the wing structure, it's just, there's such a beautiful pattern to,
mm-hmm,
it. But then you start getting into all the different birds. I mean, something as simple as a blue jay.
Mm-hmm.
If you ever really look at a blue jay, and you look at the different patterns on the wings and the blues and the black and the white, it's stunning. It's like stained glass artwork.
Yeah, it really is.
And how can you ever get sick of seeing that, or a cardinal, or even, you know, the European starling, which is as common as can be. One of our biggest illegal immigrant problems is right there with the starlings. But when you see them in the right light and you see those iridescent colors popping out,
yeah,
I mean, it's artwork that you can't even come close to capturing in any other medium. It's nature. It's real life.
You know, it's funny that you say that, because I was in Amsterdam years ago at the Kugengard. I think that's the Kukenhof. I'm sorry, the gardens in the spring where there's 200 billion tulips everywhere. And they've got all these animals, too. And they had these breeds of ducks that I'd never seen before. I mean, nothing even like it. And it was really like they looked like art. They looked like they were carved out of wood. You know, it's like nature's so much better than we are as artists. It's amazing.
Well, there's, you know, that natural brush has colors and strokes that we can't even comprehend sometimes.
Totally.
But beyond the beauty, I mean, there's that magic of flight.
Mm.
I mean, you know, I was out with some students this morning, and we had our first barn swallow of the season at
the
school.
Yay! I love them.
They're awesome. They're like little jet fighters. I see them, I'm reminded of Top Gun.
Totally.
And I say that to the kids, it's like Top Gun fighter jets. And they look at me like, Top Gun, what's that?
You don't know
what Top Gun is cool. But they're amazing. And you can see, you know, all different flight styles, you know, depending on the size, the shape of the bird.
Yeah.
But then the more you get into it, there's magical things like migration. And to know that I'm looking at a bird this morning that a few weeks ago might have been in the jungles of Costa Rica.
Wow.
Like, really? That's happening in my backyard, in my school? You know, it's happening all over the United States right now. These things are coming up from the south, and, you know, it's connecting us to those other areas that a lot of us will never even get to.
That's true. That's true. And so I'd like to talk about your school a little bit. Can you tell us about the Fledgling Birders Institute?
Well, the Fledgling Birders Institute is actually a nonprofit organization that we started, the Institute itself started in about 2009.
Mm-hmm.
It was based off of an idea I had going back to probably 2003 or so like that.
Mm-hmm.
I read in a book, you know, by a very well-known bird watcher, and he gave advice about getting kids into birding.
Mm.
And the advice was, give them binoculars, give them a field guide, and stay the heck out of their way.
That's perfect, actually.
And I thought, you know, that really works for some kids.
Yeah, it does.
But then I thought about the kids that I was taking out from my school, because that's what I do for a 9-to-5. I'm a school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the impact that birding had on these kids after the first two or three times I brought these kids out.
Wow.
And I was like, this is too good of a thing for other kids to not benefit from. And most kids will never do it because they don't have that leaning in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So they need more than just a binocular and a field guide, so they, okay, great. I want to play on my phone. I want to go play soccer. So they needed guidance. And to me, it was like when you watch a robin, you know, a lot of people have robins nesting in their backyard or mm-hmm. on their light post or whatever over the next couple of weeks and months. And if you watch the robin, you know, they have the egg, the babies hatch.
Yep.
And unlike chickens or shorebirds, the babies don't come out and start running around.
Mm.
They're totally helpless. And they need little morsels of food to get them strong, get them growing. And they're constantly being tended to and mentored and nurtured until they're ready to fledge. And I thought, that's what most people need to get into birds, not just kids, but adults too.
Because
they don't have that interest. They don't have that baseline of knowledge.
Yeah.
So if people that are into birds could take the time to mentor family, coworkers, students, you know, other people in their neighborhood, and start pointing simple birds out to them and making those connections, making it relevant to people, making them start getting more curious,
mm-hmm.
then before you know it, you have a relationship brewing between the individual who's the birding mentor and the new birder, and they start getting more into birds, and it's just a continuing cycle, and that's how you would fledge a new birder, by being there, being that mentor, giving those constant little bit of nurturing and mentoring and inspiration, and before they're ready to do it on their own, they're ready to fly free.
Oh, that's so sweet. I like that. So when you're working with kids, like, what are you seeing? How is this affecting kids when they start getting into this?
That was a total accident to stumble upon. Can I give you a little bit of backstory on that?
Yeah, totally, please.
When we got into it, my wife and I were unencumbered. We had, you know, all this free time on our hands, and I was reading all these books about these great birding destinations, the Rio Grande Valley, Alaska, California, South Florida. I was like, oh, my gosh, we got to go to all these places. This is amazing. And in my mind, I was making all these wonderful plans. And then my wife called and told me she had to take a test. I'm like, honey, you're done school. You've been out of college for a number of years. Not that type of test, Dave. Oh.
Oh.
We're going to have a baby. And in my mind, I was so excited for this little baby that we're going to have. And my life has been changed because of her and her brother. But then my birding dreams that were about a year and a half old went splat.
Yeah.
So I go to school, you know, and springtime comes. Like, I can't go out and do a lot of stuff on the weekends. So I'm going to go to school early. I'm going to go outside and start looking at birds. And I was doing that during spring migration. And I would come in from the outside, and my students, at the time I was a special ed teacher, would look at me and say, Mr. Mag, why your shoes have all kinds of grass on them, and why the bottom of your pants wet? Do you have an accident? I'm like, no. I was outside, you know, walking in the grass and looking for birds before school. And these kids are looking at me like, you know you sound like a nut. I'm like, no, but it's really fun. And they saw me doing this for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. And then they finally said, can we come out there with you?
Aww.
I was like, I don't know.
Yeah, totally.
Let me think about it. I talked to my principal. He said, sure, sounds great. Just make sure the parents give him permission, and parents drop him off.
Mm-hmm.
So that first year, I had about five or six kids that were coming early. And one of them was a wonderful young lady who really did not speak very much, very, very shy. I had a few kids who did not get along very well. And they all came out. I was like, oh, no, this could be a total problem.
Yeah, yeah.
But we got out there, and it worked. These kids that didn't talk started bonding over cardinals.
Oh, cool.
Arrows. And then the one girl who didn't talk starts really bonding with this one kid because he would come every morning with his New York Yankees cap.
Aww.
And she called it the Michael Bird because he also had a black cap and a gray shirt.
Oh, how funny.
So I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's really cool.
That is cool.
And I didn't think much of it until we get to the end of the year, and I'm sitting there, and I'm speaking with the parents a few weeks later, and, you know, one of staff members had to leave to make some copies, and the mother turns to me and says, Mr. Mag, I want to thank you. I'm like, no problem. You know, I'm here for the kids. That's what we do. We try to get them where they need to go and help them improve what we can and, you know, build up on their weaknesses. She goes, no. You gave my daughter a voice.
Wow.
And I looked at her, I'm like, well, we try to build up their writing skills and their public speaking and build up their confidence. That's part of what we do, especially with sixth grade teachers with that transition from elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, no, you don't understand. For years, our daughter would come home and sit there at lunch, at dinner, and she would sit there, and everybody else would tell about their day, and she would just sit there with her food, kind of mopey looking as the mom, you know, pantomimes it.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, my day was okay. I said, Mr. Mag, last week she came home, and we said, how was your day? And she popped up. And when she popped up, she goes, oh, my gosh, Mom, it was amazing. The Michael Bird was there again. And he had the black cap, and he had the gray shirt, and it's called the gray capper, and it was bouncing around. Now, the mom's explaining how the kid is bouncing around in their dining room, just like the bird was doing in the bushes.
Amazing.
And then it turns and it flips his tail, and it had red butt, Mom. It was awesome. And at that point, I was like, well, I'm glad to hear that, but that wasn't me. That was the great capper that gave your daughter a voice.
It's amazing.
And from that moment on, I was like, more people need to know this. More people need to expose kids to not just birds, but nature as well. Because kids have that natural inclination towards nature that a lot of us lose as we get into the quote-unquote real world that has been more fabricated than nature.
That's very, very true. God, that's a wonderful story. Well, we need to take a quick break for station identification. So I am speaking to Dave Magpyong of the Fledgling Birder Institute. We'll be back in about a minute and a half.
Thank you.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market, America's healthiest grocery store with more than 400 locations throughout the United States. Download the Whole Foods Market app on your smartphone for recipes, sales, information, and digital coupons. Or visit WholeFoodsMarket.com to find a store closest to you. The one and only Dave Arnold brings the noise to Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday on Cooking Issues.
Coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn!
If the bomb was going to drop, and you only had 15 minutes, which is like, I can make a sandwich in 15 minutes. You'd be eating a sandwich.
I'd kiss my wife, make a sandwich.
If you believe that it's all about to be over, why eat healthy? Not a freaking Neanderthal. I like a tempered ice cream sandwich. But it's the only way to get around it if you're a party master, because you're going to wind up, like, your kitchen's going to fill with dishes.
And some people have commercial dishwashers in their house.
Who?
I've seen them.
Who?
I've seen them.
Who?
Really rich people.
For more mile-a-minute knowledge from Dave and the crew, listen to Cooking Issues, available on Heritage Radio Network, iTunes, and Stitcher.
And we are back. I am talking to Dave Magpyong of the Fledgling Birder Institute, all about birds and bird watching. This is fascinating. So, let's see. Dave, I wanted to ask you, why is it important to teach people about wild birds? We were talking about it a little bit before the break for kids to understand about nature, but what do you see with adults when you get them out there?
Why is it? Wow, that's a loaded question. You know, just like it's good for kids, it's really good for adults to be out there, too. I mean, you want to talk about people that need stress relief and relaxation in our current environment? I mean, that's critical. You know, working world, get outside in nature. There have been a lot of studies over the past couple of years specifically showing what time in nature can do for people and their mental health and their emotional health and, as a result, their physical health. But then you get into what's it mean to have more people involved or caring about nature.
Yeah.
And if you look at a lot of situations that we have, you know, declining species, not just birds, but all kinds of wildlife and plant life, you know, how do we stop that? Nobody's going to protect anything if they don't care about it.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, and you know, a lot of people I do some of this work with, birds are one of the best conduit, because every day of the year you can walk outside. I don't care if you are in Cape May, if you are in Everglades, or if you're in the middle of New York City. Mm-hmm. You can walk outside and see birds.
That's very true.
And you can't get that with almost any other type of wildlife. No matter where you are, you're going to see, and not just one species, probably up to 5, 6, 10, 20 species if you really look and know what you're looking for. And, you know, that's a great way to get people captivated. And then from there, you know, most bird watchers don't stop at birds.
Mm-hmm.
They get into birds, and then they start noticing the trees that they're landing in, the insects that they're eating, the butterflies, the dragonflies, the herps, the amphibians and reptiles, and it leads to a deeper appreciation of nature. And that's where conservation comes from. And a couple years ago, in 2009, Jekyll Island, Georgia, there was it was called a Bird Conservation Through Education Conference put on by the Bird Education Network and mm-hmm. Council for Environmental Education. And at that meeting, a woman by the name of Audrey Peterman, who is quite a force for outdoor recreation, got up and spoke. And her basic conversation was, as a woman of Jamaican background, when her and her husband went to national parks, first of all, they fell in love immediately. But second of all, they did not see a lot of other people that looked like them.
Hmm.
And that started a conversation that I was not necessarily aware of that was going on in some of these circles, but about how if you look at participation rates along a lot of outdoor activities, mm-hmm. particularly something like bird watching, it does not look like the rest of our country.
Interesting.
So, you know, in a country where we are currently 40% minority populations, whether African-American, Latino, Asian, Native American, and 60% white,
mm-hmm.
as that shifts, what does that mean for conservation? What does that mean for our environmental issues? Maybe even more importantly, and to me it is more importantly because it's where I first started with all this stuff, What's it mean for those people, regardless of what their background is, but those people that are not experiencing those benefits of being outside, the pure joy of it,
yeah,
the health benefits. I mean, when I go outside and I'm doing this stuff and I feel so good, I want to share it with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I've been known to be outside my house and there'll be a bald eagle flying overhead. I'm flagging cars down to get them on.
Oh, cool.
That's one of those birds that everybody wants to see.
That's true.
And I will tell you, when I saw it with the kids last week at school, oh, my gosh, the teachers were telling me about it because the kids were sharing with them all day.
Oh, cool.
It was awesome.
That really is awesome. It's amazing. And I love the fact that, you know, it's something that I've never really thought about, but you're right. I mean, really, you know, pretty much everywhere in the world you go, you're going to see a bird every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really, really nice way to put it, too, because, for you know, it's a nice reminder, too. So that, well, you've definitely changed my thinking on that.
You know, a lot of people, like to go fishing or bowling. If you go bowling, you're hoping to get a good game,
yeah,
maybe get a couple strikes in there. If you go fishing, you're hoping to catch a fish. But just being out there is good. Just being, you know, in the bowling alley is fun. Being on a golf course, even if you're not playing a great game, it's still fun.
Mm-hmm.
But unlike almost any other hobby, or if you go to Atlantic City or you go gambling, you know, you put out these risks, but you don't always get a payback.
That's true.
If you're a bird watcher, you get payback every single time you go out. I don't know any other hobby that has that type of rate of return.
That's, yeah,
you
that's
huge.
You
might not see what you want to see if you're looking for specific, but you're going to see something. And it can probably amuse you if you really let your mind open up to it.
Totally. So, I mean, I know wild birds are facing a lot of challenges these days in terms of ecology and pollution and development and all that. Do you know how dramatically their numbers are being affected by all this stuff?
I'll be honest with you, that is not my strongest suit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, my 9-to-5 is I'm an educator. I spend a lot of time doing bird outreach, but I'm also a dad, a softball coach. And
yeah, you're busy.
But, you know, Cornell University and other organizations together over the past few years have put out reports called The State of the Birds.
Okay.
And it's unsettling. You know, some of the declines that we're seeing in some species that are widespread and well-known are, you know, being decimated.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's tragic because these are things that a lot of them are happening, if not all of them, because of our behaviors.
Yeah.
And there's so many things we could do to stop that. But most people, again, aren't aware of what we can do to stop it because they're not aware that there's an issue, and they're not even aware that things are being lost.
Totally. So, I mean, that being said, what are some things that people can do to help this out?
Okay, another great question. And that could probably be a whole
episode. I know, that could be a whole episode.
One thing that people could do is watch what they put on their lawns.
Okay.
When we put pesticides on lawns, you know, yeah, we might be killing bugs, but what do those bugs do?
Totally, they feed birds.
They're food for birds.
Yeah.
So then the birds eat them. Like, you know, we all know what's going to happen there. The birds are going to get sick, and
yep,
it causes issues.
Yep.
You know, we've had issues with, you know, people putting other types of contaminants in the environment, whether it's lead bullets or dumping chemicals into the drain.
Mm.
And it ends up in the water system. It ends up polluting, you know, our raptors. Bald eagles in Maryland was a few weeks ago were showing up poisoned.
Oh, God.
You know, there's a lot of things like that that are so simple and easy. You know, protecting your windows during migration. Right now we're coming into the peak of spring migration. A lot of birds die from hitting windows.
Yeah.
Another one that, you know, I fight with a few friends of mine about this, but I have two cats, and I'm looking at them right now as one of them's getting ready to pounce on the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Keep them inside.
Yeah.
Cats are tremendous predators. We see it in The Lion King. You see it on those great nature movies or nature documentaries. But we don't have those predators or those small felines here. So when they go outside, they devastate the birds and the other wildlife. And as we saw from a very popular eagle cam a couple days ago, sometimes they get eaten too.
Really? What ate an eagle?
No.
Oh.
An eagle ate a domestic cat.
Yeah. I saw that. I told
him.
Oh, God. I saw the link and I just couldn't do it. I mean, just like, wow.
Now, what I will tell you is if people want to know more about what to do to help birds, there's a book that every event I've put on, I've made sure to buy enough copies and get it into everybody's hands. It's called 101 Ways to Help Birds by the one and only Laura Erickson.
Cool.
And in my estimation, it is probably the most single important book that anybody that cares about birds can have.
Nice.
It's not going to tell you how to identify them.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to tell you how to protect them. And it's an amazing book that anybody that cares about birds at all should have in their hands and on their shelf and in their office to share with others.
Nice. So, Dave, I think we've got a call, actually, that's come in for you.
Okay, sounds good.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. I apologize. That was anyway, I'm wrong. I apologize. There may be one coming in shortly. So how many bird watchers are really out there, do you think? I mean, I'm assuming this is a worldwide hobby. I could see the UK being just, like, crazy about bird watching.
The numbers, you know, if you look at some of the numbers that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife puts out, the last estimate, 2011, I think it was, they came in at about 47 million bird watchers.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what they say. And, you know, about 41 million of that would break down to people that enjoy birds around the house, you know, whether it's backyard bird feeding or just being in their backyard and watching the birds that come through.
Yeah.
And 18 million of those 47 would also be those people that once or twice a year travel for birds, you know, go 5 miles beyond their house to go actively seek out birds. So if you take one of those numbers, we'll say the highest number, 47 million people. That sounds like a lot.
Yeah, it does.
But then you look at it the other way, that means that we have, what, about 260 million people that have no interest in birds?
That's a good point.
That's a very good point. So from my perspective, those 260 million people, I don't care if they're in first grade or if they're in a retirement home. I don't care if they are, you know, rich or as poor as can be. I don't care what color they are, what religion they are, gender, anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
All those 230 million people, their lives could be enhanced, improved, and made so much better and richer through birds. And if we can get to some of those, then we'll have so many more birds for them to enjoy and for future generations to enjoy.
That's true. That's very true.
It's a numbers game, and, you know, there's so much good stuff to see. Let's see it before we lose it.
It's so interesting, too, that something as simple as taking, you know, a walk in the woods with some binoculars and, like, spotting animals can make such a radical change through the environment.
Absolutely.
I mean, I love that. I love the connection there, and I love that, you know, because, like, even before, if you hear, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be talking to someone who's a bird watcher, it's like, that's great, but what does that really mean? And what it really means is that you're really educating people about what is going on with the environment, you know, and animals that are, like you said, I mean, you see them every day, they're everywhere, but also the declining in their numbers is also visible. I mean, I see it in Brooklyn now, where this year, actually, we've got a lot more birds than we had last year. And it's interesting because it's just been a year, you know. It hasn't been a long period of time. But, you know, we've got the Cardinals and the Blue Jays back. And we have this awesome mockingbird that cruises around Brooklyn who actually knows the entire car alarm sequence. So I heard him like 2 days ago. And he's like, every spring, it's like, yes, he's back. This is awesome. But he's been spending time away from me, and he's been in Crown Heights and Bushwick lately because some friends of mine have actually heard him, or we got a whole bunch of them that do this. You know, I like to pretend it's just one, but I'm assuming
there's
it's a lot.
There's a bunch out there, and, you know, they're around constantly, and so many people walk past them. And, you know, I'll be in a parking lot of a major big box store, and I'll have I'll go to the Bald Eagle because it's, you know, such an icon.
Yeah.
And I look around, and there are people driving and talking and walking, and they have no idea that 400 feet above their head is our national symbol.
Totally.
Let alone little tiny warblers that are bouncing around in treetops with all those beautiful spring songs right now that most people, if they saw, their eyes would be like, oh, my gosh, I'm playing Bejeweled Deluxe.
Exactly.
but they don't, they're not cognizant of it. And I feel bad for them because I was one of those deprived people about 15 years ago.
Uh-huh.
So I want to save them from that world of deprivation. It's so sad to not know birds.
It's sad to not want to be outside. I mean, I work with kids, too, and it's really like the group I have are very exceptional, and they want to be outside, and they want to get dirty, and they want to do all that. But so many kids these days are just like, exactly, like, I'm busy with Candy Crush or whatever it may be, you know? And
right. That
disconnect is definitely not going to do anything good for our planet and our environment, that's for sure.
No, it's not.
Without a question, you know? So, what is your favorite bird species?
The next one? That's an answer some, you know, well-known people would spit out. I can't give you that. You know, if I'm looking for something that's purely beautiful, something like the painted bunting, you know, and I'm not going to even give away a description. All I'm going to say is it's a rainbow of a bird.
Oh, cool.
That's usually in the southeastern United States, but you actually had one in your neck of the woods not too long ago. Made a big stink all over the New York press.
Oh, how funny.
That's a great one. I personally like raptors, and for me, a raptor species that I love is called the American kestrel. It's a small falcon, but the male is beautiful, a cinnamon reddish-orange, black, white, a denim blue wing to it.
Oh,
it's,
cool.
It's a phenomenal bird. It's small, it's cute, it's dainty, but that thing will mess your world up. I love that bird so much that I wanted to name my daughter when we found out we were pregnant. I wanted to name her kestrel, and my wife looked at me and said, "Are you bleeping crazy?" So I didn't get away with it.
Did you get it for the middle name?
When my niece was pregnant last year, she said, "You know, if I have a girl, I'm going to name a kestrel because that is such a pretty name." She ended up having a boy, and she named him Indigo.
Oh, nice.
And then she realized, and I didn't push this, she realized herself that there's an indigo bunting.
Oh, how funny.
So I was like, see, you still named your baby after a bird. But there's just so much to see and so much to enjoy, and I just wish everybody had the joy that I see in other bird watchers and that my family shares.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much fun.
That's the thing, too. I mean, this is a total family activity. I mean, all ages, all, you know, it's a nice way to get outside and to have a goal. Because what I see, too, is so many people are like, let's go outside. And then they go outside and they don't know what they're doing, you know, because so many people have lost the ability to just like chill out and just relax. And so this gives people a goal to like get outside, to interact, to talk to each other, to actually look up for a change, you know, get around some trees, get around some nature and just have a lovely day.
It's there's so many ways to do it. I mean, if somebody wants to chill, there's a thing called a big sit where they, you know, sometimes it's a competition, and people actually just sit in one spot and count all the birds they can for that 24 hours or, you know, from sunup to sundown.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing. In Cape May, I think last year they had in one day 140 birds, if I'm correct, from one single spot.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible.
That is pretty incredible. I wouldn't have expected that.
Yeah, it's amazing, you know, what people can do. And, again, people of all ability levels can do this stuff. And, you know, it would be nice if we saw more people getting out there and, you know, more bird watchers saying, hey, let me show you this. You know, just take a few seconds out of our own time to brighten somebody else's day. Because in the end, it all comes around to benefit all of us.
And it's a really nice way, it's a nice thing for people to have in common. You know, you
Absolutely.
Can be from everything, and it doesn't matter because you're just talking about birds. We don't need to get heavy duty, you know. It's like it's very simple, which is awesome.
And it's funny because people hear I'm a bird watcher, and, you know, I'll say, oh, you're a bird nerd, or you know, some other things I'm not even going to get into on a family radio show. But, you know, some of the things that people might say.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you how often those same people come back to me. I get text, I get pictures sent to me. What's this? What's that? And before
That's
you know
funny.
It, boom. They're asking. I was actually went to a local convenience store with a friend of mine a couple of years ago, and he went to go pour a cup of coffee. I said, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe you just did that." He said, "What happened? What you did? What I do?" I said, "You just killed a cerulean warbler."
Oh.
Like, what? Like, oh, well, you see these warblers, they winter down in South America, and that's where the coffee plantations are, and
oh,
here
come
the
wow.
habitat, so they can grow the coffee. So if you drink, you know, bird-friendly, shade-grown coffee, you'd be helping those birds. And he's like, oh, wow, that's interesting.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. The things that we do to impact birds and nature, you know, most people have no idea at all. And, again, that's why 101 Ways to Help Birds is such a good resource for people.
It really sounds like it. I mean, this is one book I'm definitely going to pick up for my collection because it's, you know, as you were saying, it's such a great thing. I have a question for you, actually, and I'm hoping you can help me with this because I find it's, for wild birds, I find this is a very hot topic. In terms of people that have bird feeders in their backyards, what are the rules for bird feeders, do you think?
One big one is if you have a neighborhood where you have feral cats or outdoor cats, I wouldn't suggest bird feeders.
Okay.
Especially, you know, platform feeders or feeders close to the ground or ground feeding.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, you're giving birds some food, but you're setting them up to be devoured.
Yeah, totally.
Keep them clean.
Mm.
Clean them regularly. That's a really important part because most people don't realize that, you know, when you put out bird feeders, you could be spreading disease very easily. I mean, imagine if you go to a buffet and everybody just sticks their face in the, you know, in the salad bar.
Totally.
That's basically what birds are doing.
It's a good point.
So if, you know, somebody has conjunctivitis, you're going to get it too.
Wow.
I'm not even going to get into the other diseases we can get at food buffets and stuff like that. So those are two of the big ones. And we don't necessarily need to feed, but if you do, you want to do it the right way, and you want to try to pick food that's going to be as healthy for them as possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people want to go out and feed ducks bread.
Yeah.
Not the best choice.
Mm.
It's not, bread is not good for birds.
Yeah.
So, you know, try to do a little bit of research. And again, there are some books out there about bird feeding. One was just put out by Paul Basich, and it's a history of bird feeding and a lot of recommendations. So that's really good volume pickup. It just came out, oh gosh, I guess it was maybe 6 months ago.
Okay.
So, you know, Paul Basich's book on bird feeding is just a great resource.
Cool, because that's the thing. I think people are like, how to feed a bird? Go get a feeder, fill it with seed, and hang it up, and you're done, you know? And it's
well, it could be a little bit more to that, but if you go to a place like Wild Birds Unlimited or Wild Bird Centers of America, and
yeah,
both of them have hundreds of stores across the country, you'll have a lot of experts that can really tweak you and get you what you need for
nice.
Your area, for the birds that you have, and for what the birds you want to see.
And, I mean, you know, the proper diets, too. I would assume that in different areas of the U.S., animal, I mean, for the most part, the seed eaters, I would assume, are pretty similar, but I'd assume yeah. some areas are more sunflower seed, more corn, more whatever, you know, or grasses.
But, and then on top of it, I've actually heard of people that feed vultures.
Oh, God.
They'll take a deer that they've maybe hunted or roadkill and put it out in an big open field and feed the vultures.
Well, at least it's being used. I mean, I'm all for recycling and getting everything out of it. If it has to die, let's use it up. But blah. I mean, I lived in Florida for a while. Those
hey,
things are nasty.
Vultures have their own beauty that
absolutely.
Is so majestic. If you can get past the looks.
They're just, exactly. I mean, they're wonderful birds, but God, they freak me out. I could tell you that much. But sadly, Dave, I've had so much fun. You are so much fun, but we are running out of time. It stinks.
Aww.
I want to have you back in the future. But before we go, I wanted to find out how people can find out more about you and about the FBI or the Fledgling Birder Institute, because you have a lot of information.
Fledgling Birders Institute, it's a website that we have online, fledglingbirders.org. I believe you're going to have it linked up when you put the podcast up. Is that
yes.
accurate?
Yes.
Okay. That's a great way to get in touch with, you know, some of the things that we're doing and learn from the resources. You can also get in touch with us on Facebook at Fledgling Birders Institute. That's another good way.
Cool.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Fledgling Birders. I'm not the best Twitter person. But I'm getting better, I think, sometimes.
It's a process.
Good the past 2 weeks.
Good. Hey, you know, it's a daily thing. I hear you. These things can be hard to keep up on.
Yeah. So do you have any other questions? Because, you know, I think I would love to go out and run it to some of your listeners and find out that they bought, you know, Feeding Wild Birds in America by Paul Basich or, you know, 101 Ways to Help Birds, because then I know that they care enough to help.
Well, what I would love is if anybody is listening to the show or whoever's listening to the show that really likes it, please leave a comment on our Facebook page, which is Animal Instinct, or you can tweet to me at Food Healer, because I would love some feedback too. And if we do have any more questions for you, we'll either bring you back for another episode, which I'd like to do anyway, or I can contact you and get the answers and put them back up on the page if people need anything specifically answered. But I've really, really enjoyed this conversation. I knew it was going to be interesting, but I didn't realize the impact that bird watchers have on everything. So thank you so much for what you're doing and teaching people all this groovy stuff. I think it's awesome.
Thank you, Sherry. It was a pleasure to be on, and so much more we could talk about. We didn't even get to my FBI investigation.
I know.
I did not get there.
Well, we're going to have to do it again, babe, because seriously, you're a blast. I really, really enjoyed it. So,
thank you.
And for everybody else, I will be back next week, next Monday, 6 p.m., with a whole new episode, something about animals. It's going to be exciting. Thanks for listening. Have a great week, and take care.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.